I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is sponsored by Bomba, the original peanut butter puffs. I first discovered Bomba, the original peanut butter puffs, from an Israeli friend who told me she had been eating them since she was a baby. Bomba is the number one selling snack in Israel. Knowing the very low numbers of peanut allergies in Israel, she has made it a point of feeding them to her kids to reduce their risk of developing a peanut allergy. I decided to find out if there was any truth to that, and she was right. A LEAP study, which stands for Learning Early About Peanut Allergies, shows that early exposure to peanuts reduced peanut allergies by over 80%. The study even names Bomba as a snack product used in the LEAP trial. I was hooked, and with just four simple non-GMO ingredients, no artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives, no gluten, no added sugar, and vegan, they're also a snack I feel good about giving my kids. So see for yourself. Buy Bomba peanut butter puffs in different locations across the country. I find them in the baby aisle in Target.
I remember the very first time that I fed our oldest son, Henry, real food, like table food. He was 6 months old. I had waited as long as I thought I was supposed to wait. He was showing signs of interest in food. He was reaching and grabbing for the meals that I was eating. So one night I sat him down in his little chair. We were in our little DC apartment, and I got the great idea to feed Henry steel cut oats. My mother-in-law has a really great recipe for steel cut oatmeal. We make it all the time. And the second that I put the spoon into his mouth, it was clear that this was a horrible idea. He just gave me this very wise and sort of appalled look, like, what is this? As much as I thought he might be interested in food, it was clear he was not interested in this food. And it's funny because I really thought I was doing something good, that I was feeding him this healthy food. But looking back, it didn't work. Steel-cut oats, as I now realize, are a really intense first food. They have so much texture and it's really thick. But looking back, we had to do trial and error, not just on things that Henry liked, but in my own understanding of what it takes to nourish a family, which is the journey of a lifetime. Hey, Mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy, the co-founder of Motherly, and I am a mother of four myself. This week, I'm super excited to speak with dietitian, nutritionist, food allergy specialist, and consultant to the National Peanut Board, Sherry Coleman Collins. Sherry is a mother to a son and previously was a foster parent. In our conversation, Sherry and I talked about the best ways to introduce foods to your baby and what the latest research on allergies like eggs and peanuts tell us. That advice has changed a lot over the last decade. And Sherry also gives us realistic and flexible approaches to healthy eating. You're going to want to listen to this one. Sherry Coleman Collins, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
I always like to begin and ground these conversations in your worldview, your approach to motherhood. I'm curious, what do you think makes your approach to motherhood unique?
Well, you know, oftentimes I've told my friends that I'm sort of a crunchy light mom. You know, I think I'm very focused on a lot of the basics, you know, nutrition, sleep, physical health. But also, I think because I'm an older mom, you know, I was almost 40 when my son was born. I came into motherhood with a whole lot of life experience that has helped me be a more patient mom, maybe with a little more holistic view of parenting.
Well, that's really interesting. Did you always think you were going to be a mom? Did you grow up dreaming of it? What was that like?
Yeah, I wanted to be a mom, but my life just kind of took a meandering way. You know, I had some false starts with relationships and married my husband later. And this is the way that my life unfolded. You know, I was very focused on education and a career, and motherhood just came later than I expected. Mm.
So tell me more about how that maturity that you brought to motherhood shaped maybe your intentionality, or maybe even the ways that you were more willing to be flexible on some things you might have been dogmatic about if you had become a mother earlier.
I think I'm able to put parenting into the right perspective as part of my life. It isn't all of my life, but it's a really important part of my life. So I'm still a professional. I'm still very active and engaged, but I'm able to prioritize my relationship with him. And I don't feel guilty about it like I think a lot of my younger counterparts who are still really working hard on their career, they really struggle with the balancing act of mothering and working. And I feel like I'm a little bit more able, because I was already pretty accomplished before I became a mom. It was easier for me to know that there'll always be time to make more money. There'll always be time to build my business. But this time with my son is going to go by really fast, and it will be really short in the long game of life.
I love all of that so much. I know at one time you and your husband were also foster parents, and I'm curious what that experience taught you, specifically about the definition of motherhood and parts of you that were mothering in maybe new ways.
You know, I have often said that fostering is sort of like a refining fire of motherhood. You bring a child into your home that isn't your child, and you know from the beginning that it's not your child and that the child will very likely leave your home at some point. And also at the same time, this child has a desperate need for attachment and love and for all of the things that you can give them as a mother that they maybe have never had. And so I think that teaches you, or at least it has taught me, to love much more sacrificially, much more uninhibitedly, right? So loving for the sake of loving, for the sake of another person, without anything expected in return. When children come into foster care, they always have experienced trauma, because at the very least, they've been separated from the people that love them, that have provided for them, that are, even if they're not safe, they're the only ones they've ever known. So in their minds, they're still safe. And so the children come in with all kinds of experiences, and they need a safe place to unwrap some of that. Even very young children, even a child who might not be verbal yet, still needs to be able to process that. And I think sometimes with the very young children, it's even harder because they can't verbalize it. So I think it's taught me, you know, how to let go of my own expectations about mothering. And maybe it's also taught me to be a little bit more prepared for the heartaches that come from mothering my own child, because inevitably there's going to be disappointment and loss in relationships. It's just part of relationships.
I love that unconditional love, love for the sake of love, love without expecting anything in return. That's the deepest meaning of what motherhood, I think, is in all circumstances. So thank you for that. I know we've talked a bit about your motherhood experience. I also want to talk about your area of professional expertise, which is nutrition, definitely nutrition with an emphasis on the realities of family life. And also, you're an expert in how to reduce allergies through nutrition. So first of all, tell us how you got into nutrition science.
So I had always been interested in food and nutrition. When I was about 17, I became a vegetarian. And I had never really thought about becoming a dietitian, though. I just didn't really know about it. And then I went into fundraising, actually worked for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, and met a dietitian who worked with patients who had CF. And I was just fascinated by the fact that food and nutrition can prevent and manage disease in such an impactful and profound way. And then I decided I wanted to become a dietitian and went back to school and then worked in lots of different areas. Clinical pediatrics was where I started, and I worked in IBD, so within inflammatory bowel disease and patients who had Crohn's and colitis, and I worked with children who had spina bifida. lots of different opportunities. And all along the way, had a little bit of work in food allergies as well, because there's a bit of overlap in those populations. Then I went into school nutrition, and I worked in school nutrition for about 5 years, and eventually found my way to the National Peanut Board, where I worked on staff until my son was born. You know, I went from working full-time to working part-time for them as a contract employee after my son was born. And so now I work with the National Peanut Board and help educate people about food allergies, but also about nutrition in general.
Mm-hmm. I think you said at the beginning, your approach to motherhood has been this crunchy, light approach. But I'd like to hear a bit about how you take this largely healthy, largely plant-based, but also flexible. How do you actually apply that in your life, not just as a dietitian, but as a mother?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, that's really about looking at how can we, again, get sort of strip things down to the basics? You know, how can we focus on what we know is healthy, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, you know, nuts and seeds, including peanuts? How can we make these foods the central part of how we eat? And how can we incorporate them into every meal and every snack? That's really sort of my mission always, is thinking about how can I incorporate these foods into every snack? And that's kind of all of that. And then I live in the real world. Like, you know, sometimes I need to add things that make my life easier. Fruits and vegetables can sometimes take a little longer to prepare. So I might go with a much more simple protein if we're going to have animal protein, or I might go with something very simple like tofu or cheese as sort of the protein source. And then we love sweets. We love desserts. We do not skip dessert in my house. We
really?
Have dessert. We enjoy ice cream. Yeah. I love to make cookies. We still enjoy those things as well. So there's sort of this 80-20 idea that many people have adopted. You know, 80% of the time we eat whole, nutritious, delicious foods. And then 20% of the time we enjoy those sweets and treats and convenience foods that can kind of make our life a little easier, but also keep everybody in the house a little happier.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in America, we're up against a lot of headwinds in the way that we think about food, the food choices that we have, our lifestyle. So all of that speaks deeply to me. I want to talk a little bit more as well about food allergies. So I became a mom for the first time about 10 years ago. And the recommendations today for some of these core allergens are actually really different than they were when I became a mom. So let's start with some of the basics. We know that food allergies are on the rise. Do we know why?
We don't. What we know is that all sort of allergic disease is on the rise. So it's not just food allergies, but it's also asthma and environmental allergies. Those are also on the rise. It probably has something to do with changes in our lifestyle. You know, we know that the genetics haven't changed significantly over the last several decades, and yet we have seen this rise. So the thinking is it has something to do with our environment or our lifestyles. There's something we're doing differently that has impacted how our bodies respond to the food that we eat.
You know, I've read a bit about how we live in such a clean environment now relative to the way our ancestors grew up. And certainly we're living in a time of uber hand washing all the time and making sure we're really protected from other diseases. And yet somehow this, from what I've read, some of this more sterile environment is also affecting our immune system and allergens and things like that in some maybe unexpected ways. Is that true? Is that one of the components?
Yeah, absolutely. So what you're describing is called the hygiene hypothesis. And the idea is that our bodies were created to protect us, right? And our immune system is designed to protect us. So it's sort of at the ready all the time to attack any invaders and kill bacteria and pathogens, parasites. But when we're no longer being presented with those challenges, our body is still ready. And there's some thought that perhaps it's a bit of misfiring, right? It's our bodies think that it should be protecting us from something, and it mistakes proteins in foods for a pathogen, perhaps a parasite. There's great research that shows that we are exposed to proteins in all different kinds of ways, right? And including through our skin. So when we think about food allergies in particular, we know that children who have moderate to severe eczema, this is broken skin, right? Where they got broken skin. There are proteins in the environment where we live, right? There's protein in the dust in our house. This is weird to think about, but it's true. There's food protein even in the dust in our house and the dust in our beds. So babies who have broken skin are being exposed to that protein through their skin. And the skin is a really important part of our immune system. It actually protects us as a barrier but it also contains lots of immune cells within the layers of the skin. So if the skin is broken, those proteins can get into the skin and actually activate the immune system to begin the process of reacting to proteins that we wouldn't otherwise react to.
Let me back up for a second. Can you help us to understand what actually is an allergy? And let's focus maybe on what is a food allergy specifically.
That's a great question. Thank you for asking that, because I think a lot of people have a misunderstanding about what food allergies are, right? There are lots of different kinds of reactions you can have to food. All of them are not food allergies, right? So food allergy, as I'm describing, it's really an IgE-mediated reaction. An IgE is an antibody that our bodies make in response to something. It's the chemical messenger that tells our bodies, this is foreign and you need to protect yourself from it. And foods that we eat contain proteins. Most of the time, protein is what triggers this IgE development. And so if we eat a food that contains a protein that our bodies think is foreign or bad for us, then the body mounts a response. That's an allergic reaction. And that can happen to environmental antigens as well, or allergens as well. But with food, it starts in the gut. So we eat the food, it starts in the mouth and in the throat and in the gut.
Let's walk through the process of a mother and her child experiencing allergies or attempting to ward off potential food allergies. Walk me through some of these core stages and what mothers can do to prevent allergies or even to anticipate them if there's a family history.
We're still learning. There are a lot more questions than answers when it comes to food allergies. I think that's one important thing to recognize. But the most important thing we can try to do is prevent it. I would say that what we know is that if you have a family history of allergy, then you should probably start talking to your pediatrician about that early when you have a baby. Let the pediatrician know about that. But as far as pregnancy and breastfeeding and those kinds of things, what we know is that those can't definitively prevent food allergy at this point. So there's no research that supports the idea of withholding or eating any particular food to prevent food allergy, either while you're pregnant or when you're breastfeeding. So I always recommend a liberal diet. So as long as you like the food and you don't have a food allergy, eat all the foods. Eat all the foods. And what we know too about food allergens is the most common food allergens, right? So there are 8 foods that cause about 90% of reactions in the US. So that's milk, eggs, peanuts, tree nuts, fish, shellfish, wheat, and soy. And recently sesame was added as the 9th most common allergen. But all of those foods, if you think about them, those are all really nutritious foods, right? Yeah, they're the foods that we actually want to be eating more often. So I always tell people, don't avoid those foods unless you have a problem with them when you're pregnant or when you're breastfeeding.
Okay. And what about introducing those to your child? When I first became a mom almost 10 years ago, you were not supposed to introduce eggs early. That was according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, out of fear of an egg allergy. And it seems that some of that science has emerged that for those who are not high risk for an egg allergy, it's better to introduce early. So can you walk us through some of those core moments of early introduction or not when it comes to preventing allergies when you're really starting to introduce nutrition to your child?
Yeah, for years we thought that, and I think that was the conservative thinking, was that if you withheld those foods, then you were less likely to trigger an allergy in a child who was susceptible to that. And we don't really even understand completely who are the people who are susceptible to developing allergy. We know that there are some risk factors we can identify, but many children who go on to develop food allergies had no known risk factors. So what we know is that in infancy, well, what we thought was by withholding it, we might prevent an allergy.
Right.
But after decades, we realized, of course, that that doesn't work. You know, it doesn't prevent it. We were still seeing this steep increase, even though most parents were not introducing eggs or peanuts or many of the other allergens in that first year. And then in about 2008, a study was published that linked eating peanut foods early with a reduced risk of allergies. And that research changed the approach from the American Academy of Pediatrics, who at that time actually said, no, there's no reason to withhold these foods. But they didn't actively tell people to feed the babies those foods because that evidence didn't exist yet either. And then in 2015, a study was published called the LEAP study, Learning Early About Peanut, that actually showed that when we introduce peanut foods to babies early, starting at around 4 to 6 months, these babies in particular who are at high risk, and you mentioned high risk, so babies who are at high risk either because they already had existing egg allergy or because they had moderate to severe eczema, which we talked about, the skin barrier, if those children were introduced to peanut foods early, there was up to an 86% reduction in peanut allergies. Huge, huge intervention.
That's pretty groundbreaking. First of all, that the paradigm changed from let's totally avoid these foods out of, you know, fear for provoking an allergy to, oh, the growing evidence shows that by safely introducing these foods earlier, children grow a tolerance for that food instead of having a heightened reaction somewhere down the line. It's so interesting. And living through this as a parent, sometimes you're like, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing, and now we're being recommended to do something else. For those who are high risk, do you recommend that they work through that introduction process with their pediatrician?
Yeah, absolutely. So if a child does have already existing allergy, if they've already been diagnosed with one allergy in that first year, or they have severe to moderate eczema, or they have eczema that started very early and has been persistent, definitely talk to the pediatrician first, just to get an idea of what they recommend in the way of safety. There is a chance that even before a child has eaten the food, they may develop an allergy. Remember what I was talking about, the skin, that sort of skin exposure. So we want to make sure that the child doesn't already have an allergy before they start to eat the food. But as long as they're clear to start, once a baby starts eating solid foods, you can go ahead and start adding these allergens in an infant safe way. And that includes all the allergens. The most evidence is on peanut and egg right now. So peanut and egg, you definitely want to get in early with the pediatrician's blessing. Now, most children are not going to be high risk. That's the other thing to remember, is that most children are not going to be high risk. They're not going to have eczema. You know, somewhere around 25% of babies have eczema. Most of those babies are not going to have very severe eczema. So most of those babies, even if they have mild eczema, that's not considered a high risk. If they have already an existing allergy, you want to do a bit of a stepwise pattern. But for most other kids, it's not going to be an issue. And one of the other beautiful things about doing this allergen introduction is these allergenic foods are super nutritious. They're delicious, but they're also packed with nutrition. And so getting those foods into the baby's diet, ensure that they're going to be eating enough protein, that they're getting lots of other vitamins and minerals that may be hard for them to get from other foods.
You work, I'm sure, with many parents who face food allergies and other kinds of allergies. And our family, we don't have those kinds of allergies, but my friends who do, it is really an enormous burden. And I know for many of them, it's scary because they're worried about their child's health. What do you think those of us who just want to be supportive of the people in our lives who are raising children with food allergies, what can we do to better show them that we care, that we're there for them, that we respect their journeys?
It is. And there's some research that shows that moms in particular carry a huge burden of managing food allergies and the anxiety associated with food allergies, because you never know when that very severe reaction is going to happen. And life-threatening reactions do happen. And while death due to food allergies is actually pretty rare, it's still a possibility. And so even if it's rare, if it's your child, that's very, very scary. So I would say, as a friend, you know, what we need to do is let our mom friends know, hey, I understand this is an issue for you. I don't understand exactly how you feel, but I'm here. If you want to talk about it, if there's something I can do to help you, please let me know. You can educate yourself about food allergies. If you've got the opportunity to help them with their child, be a safe place for their child, that's, I think, a really great opportunity. A lot of parents who have children with food allergies avoid social situations. They don't allow their children to eat at other people's houses. They may not allow their child to spend the night at other people's houses. So these children don't always have some of the most typical experiences of childhood because their parents are so concerned about keeping them safe. So if you can provide a safe household by partnering with them and helping them, that goes a long, long way.
So let's start with some of the basics. Where do you even begin with introducing some of these foods to your little ones? I know that, at least for me, introducing foods and getting to eating real food can be a really stressful time. What are those steps that you recommend parents take in making food a healthy and not stressful experience for the whole family?
That's a great question. I think one of the most important things is to make sure the child is ready. So when we think about introducing solid foods, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends exclusive breastfeeding or formula for the first 6 months and then introduce solid foods for most babies. Now, if the child is high risk, there may be benefit to introducing a little bit earlier, so around 4 months, but that's something to discuss with the pediatrician. In any case, when you're introducing any food, whether it's an allergen or it's not, you want to make sure that the baby's ready, right? So are they holding their head up well? Are they able to sit up on their own without a lot of support? Are they showing an interest in solid foods? You know, sometimes babies will start chewing with you. You know, they may not have anything in their mouth, but they'll be chewing right along with you. They may lean in to try to get a bite of whatever you're eating. Those are signs that a baby's ready to start solid foods. And you can start in a lot of different ways. Baby-led weaning is very popular now, but for years, women and men, you know, anybody who's feeding a baby has used purees. A combination of those two things works really well, I think. But you want to make sure that the texture is right, that you're not introducing, in the case of peanuts, you don't want to give a baby whole nuts. That's not safe. You don't want to give them a big glob of peanut butter. That's not safe either. But you can take peanut butter, which most households already have anyway, thin it with a little breast milk formula, and give it to the baby. That's a perfectly safe way to feed a baby peanuts. You can mix the same kinds of things into puree. So if you're feeding the baby infant safe cereal, you can add a little bit of peanut butter. 2 teaspoons is about what's considered a serving. So give them 2 teaspoons of peanut butter, mix it into their puree, applesauce or cereal, or you can use powdered peanut butter. That's another safe way to do it. Or you can use puffs. There are a lot of puff products now on the market that have peanut in them, baked into them, and they just melt in the baby's mouth. Or if the baby's very young and you want to use that method, you could even melt that with a little bit of breast milk or formula as well.
Those are really, really helpful. I wish I had some of that. I introduced my very first kid. His first meal was steel-cut oats. I will never forget. This is the very first thing I fed him. He looked at me like, what are you doing? And now I realize they're like little balls of oatmeal. And he went from never eating food. What was I thinking? But we learn along the way. I wish I had those steps when I was trying to figure out how to feed my little guy the first time. I total amateur.
Yeah, now you're a pro.
Those are super helpful. Okay, taking a step back for a moment, we talked about a lot of tactics about how to raise healthy eaters, how to deal with difficult moments, food allergies, those kinds of challenges many of us face. I'm wondering, what does the family meal mean to you? And what have you learned about your family by putting a big emphasis on that time you spend together eating?
I think that you've alluded to exactly what it is in my mind, and that is that time together. It's about togetherness. It is about feeding us well and nourishing our bodies physically, but to me, it's much more about that emotional connection, right? You know, I grew up in a household where food was really important and we gathered together regularly. And my grandmother was sort of the matriarch of our family and she made beautiful biscuits and she cooked with a loving hand. And for me, it's the same thing, right? My family comes to the table. We have an opportunity to experience a delicious meal together. I mean, every meal is not delicious, I'm not going to lie, but most of the meals or many of the meals are delicious. They're nourishing our bodies, but they also give us the opportunity to sit together, to talk about the day, to practice good manners, to appreciate each other. And everyone at our table also has a job, right? So I'm the cook and I prepare the meals, but my son gathers the napkins and the forks, and my husband takes care of the drinks. And then when we sit together, you know, we say grace together. It's an opportunity for us to just connect around a time that's dedicated. We don't allow devices, there's no distraction, we don't have TV. It's our opportunity to be together.
Beautiful. Well, Sherry Coleman Collins, thank you so much for sharing all of your expertise and joining us on the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to our sponsor, Bomba Peanut Butter Puffs. As our guest, Sherry Coleman Collins, just explained, studies show that introducing children to peanut foods as young as early infancy can help reduce their risk of developing a peanut allergy. A great first introduction to peanuts are Bomba Peanut Butter Puffs, as seen on the LEAP study that Sherry talked about in the episode. LEAP stands for Learning Early About Peanut Allergies. Did I mention they're also delicious? So try not to eat them all yourself. You can buy Bomba Peanut Butter Puffs in different locations across the country. I myself buy them in the baby aisle in Target.
So here's one from your memory banks. Do you remember the first food that you ate?
I don't.
Do you remember any stories we've told you about what you were like when you were little?
Well, for one thing, I know that you said that you weren't able to order me kiddie meals. You had to get me, like, big Whoppers.
Yeah, when you were a toddler, you couldn't have a kid meal. You would eat an adult-sized portion of food.
Yeah.
Do you remember steel-cut oatmeal in Oma's recipe?
I do.
So, did you know that the first meal I ever fed you was steel-cut oatmeal?
I don't.
Did you know that? You were 6 months old. You were just a little Henry.
Do you think you liked it?
No.
Correct. You did not like it. And you looked at me with a face that said, "Lady, what is this?" Well, that's it for this week's episode. Sherry, thank you so much. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest. I hope you'll be with us. As always, we would love it if you spread the word about the Motherly Podcast. So if you can, please, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can do it right now. It takes about 30 seconds and it helps other listeners discover our show. I love reading your feedback and I truly read every single one. The Motherly Podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett with audio editing from Seaplane Armada. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.